Hi everyone, I'm Mingja Chen, and this is The D Word. Do you love poetry, books, photography, music, or anything else that doesn't necessarily seem related to dance? Every 2 weeks, we interview someone phenomenal who works in these fields and is directly or indirectly inspired by dance. But they aren't dancers themselves. We want to know, how is the world actually affected by dance? This week, calling in through Zoom, we have Toronto vocalist and musician Alex Samaris. Alex is the founding member of many projects, including the band Trial and vocal group Grex, in which I am a member. Grex explores the extremes of the human voice and the body-voice connection. Alex has worked as a composer and collaborator with choreographers including Susie Burpee and Christopher House. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Mingja. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Well, to hear you and see you, I guess for our listeners, we are on Zoom, but
I'm hearing you.
Yes, hearing me and seeing me. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. I went for a walk in Hyde Park. I taught a few lessons. I had some chia pudding that I made last night. You know, when you make something overnight and then you put it on top of cereal, I'm feeling good. And it's sunny out, so there's a sense of inspiration and flow, I would say. Say I'm flowing.
Yeah. I wish our listeners could like see you right now because your face is like glowing.
I'm at the window. I sit at the window and I'm like, I look like I haven't slept in 10 years. So you really can't see my face. It's just whitewashed.
It's beautiful.
Nice to see you though too. And
thank you.
So I love talking to you and we're just having a chat.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And for those tuning in, Alex is somebody I've known for quite a while. You were my teacher. Actually, that's how we first got to know each other.
so funny to think about that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And
you were my teacher, just for the record. Just for the record.
We're everyone's teachers. We're teaching left and right. Teaching and learning. That's what we're doing today. So let's jump right into it. I want to start by asking you about a group you lead called Grex, which incorporates a lot of movement and quote-unquote choreography. Can you tell our listeners a bit about that group, that project?
Yeah, well, right now it's sort of the culmination of it's a journey for me of like 10 years of I came back to Toronto from New York having worked with Meredith Monk and realized I had this desire to really work with her and be in New York. And then I realized when I was there that she was just working with her friends that she's known for like 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just doing their work together. And I was like, oh, okay. I don't need to be here. So I came back to Toronto and I wanted to start a vocal ensemble, which initially was to perform other people's new music. That was the goal. Mm-hmm. So we would do sets of a lot of different types of singing so that people could hear our ability to do lots of different things and play with the voice. I really wanted to just explore the voice with people that I trusted and loved to be in a rehearsal room with. And then it shifted into like a male only group where it was low voices. I wanted to explore low voices and folk songs and improvising and like improvising around a solo singer who's performing a folk song and kind of focused on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that morphed into realizing I just wanted to work with women only, exclusively, which I get to do a lot of anyway. Most of my working life, I would say, is like, 80% with women. And I really love that. And then I decided that I wanted to be listening more than actively performing.
Yeah.
Which also came out of having worked with a lot of dance projects through all those years, through like the last 10 years, and seeing how a choreographer works and how they talk to dancers and the space that's created in a dance rehearsal, which is so different than music, where we're like, show up, learn the music, do the gig, which I love too. That's a joy, as you know. It's like so fun and thrilling to be on the edge of your seat and you come in 2 hours rehearsal, then do a show. But I realized that there's a whole other way, and there's this whole research period, and even framing, framing your approach as research. I'd never allowed myself to use that word before. And it just opened up my mind. And so now, working with you and Mara and Jill, Mara Nasrallah and Jill Harris, it's a reaction to the work. Then I'll have to go back a few years as well to the work I was doing in Montreal with my friends Eugénie Tremblay and Fred Roy. And they are just a beautiful pair of singers who are really, well, Fred especially is really interested in talking about the process of making things. And so I realized my practice was just being in a room with them and bringing my music and some other, again, folk songs or kind of other forms of using the voice and bringing it to them and then working together and playing together. So that distilled a bunch of ideas in a form. And now with some singers that I admire and just want to work with, you, Mara and Jill, I realized that we could, we could work together. And I felt comfortable, quote unquote, leading, which I don't actually, that's actually not the right word. Like, just kind of facilitating you three singing together and offering like bits of a recipe. Anyway, yeah, I'm going on and on. But does that answer your question about Grex? Like, that's what Grex is now. And I think it's going to keep on changing. I also see my work being really specific and then some people getting it and being like, great, that's Alex's work. That was fun. Next, you know, and then someone else coming in and discovering it. And that's exciting to me. I've been in that situation where I work with someone and I'm like, I've had my era with them. Now I move on. And I'm realizing that I am now making something that, again, I was ready to like perform and crystallize what we had made. Mm-hmm. And then COVID struck. I've still been working kind of semi-regularly with my friend Ellen, who is a dancer in Montreal. And she and I have been talking about the Grex piece quite a bit. And she's helped me. She's a choreographer and a dancer and has helped me frame how to like approach it when we go back into it when we can.
Ellen, who, by the way, just for those tuning in.
It's on the tip of my tongue. Ellen Fury. That's Ellen so funny Fury. because my partner's middle name is Fury Child. Whoa. And I didn't remember Ellen's last name. Yeah, Ellen Fury. And we do an exchange. So I give her some vocal work and she talks about the Grex piece with me. And
whoa.
Yeah. And it's always expanding and helps me. It actually allows myself to do what I've always been wanting to do, but thought like, oh, I have to keep everything open. And she's like, actually, you can ask for really specific things that'll help the performers.
Really, like, she's the one who kind of showed you that it's okay to be like precise or like give direction.
Yes, to really, because a big part of it for me is that everyone is actually experiencing a feeling. And that's to me, Grex is turning into this exploration of like, to me, performance colliding with experiencing something real, which of course we're always doing that when we perform, but there's something for me, I've always loved performing. And so I've done the thing that is performing. And then I realized that it's possible to practice something where you are A, like working on your instrument and doing technique, quote unquote, like something technical that's giving you like a positive feeling and maybe something emotional and maybe something personal in yourself and between someone else. And then to get to then share that in a performance, I find really interesting and also subtle and worth spending time researching and exploring.
Yeah, right. Something that I've heard you say quite a bit is that when we're singing, we're dancing, even though we're not physically dancing. Can you talk a bit about what you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of movement in so many little parts of our body that, I mean, sorry, I don't think, I know. And as you know, like we know that when we're singing, our vocal folds are moving, our larynx is moving up and down, our belly, our breath, our rib cage is expanding and contracting. There's all this like work, gentle, mm-hmm. subtle work happening while we sing. And the fact that you're doing it with someone else, so like blending and singing in unison, is this beautiful dance. Mm-hmm. Like it's like choreographed swimming where you're moving together at the same pace, yeah. at the same time. And I think, again, this goes back to when I first discovered Meredith Monk and, you know, realized that the voice, well, and she said that, this is her quote, but the voice is as flexible as the spine, you know, and that just kind of like, when I heard that, yeah. And then when there was this documentary I saw where just the opening is her song, it's called Do You Be, and just the way that she was using her voice and singing, and then she goes into this like bird high thing, which you obviously can do with your voice, and I love when you explore your voice in those ways. But I just realized, it hit me in such a deep place that I was like, oh, that's what I've always been doing. And I didn't know. That's what I was always exploring. Yeah. I recently found a tape of myself as a kid. Like, you saw that.
Like photo at Ron C. Guy on Instagram. Oh, I guess it's not.
It was a story. Anyway, it's gone forever. But
let you talk about it.
Yeah, I just like, as even as a kid, I remember my mom saying once, "Wow, you sound like a violin," and I was like, "I'm trying to be a violin." And I was always like, just exploring the voice. And I think, again, it's just for the brain. It's for your brain. If you allow yourself to think, "Oh, I'm dancing," there's more possibilities and there's more exploration that can happen. So
yeah.
I think, yeah, I say that a lot. Again, writing the inspiration from Meredith, and also I think I'm discovering mm-hmm. for my own self what that means. And I'll say that these days I'm really working on stillness while singing physically.
Yeah.
I really move a lot and I love that, but sometimes I get out of control and then I lose myself, and now I'm working a lot on stillness. And I feel like the more that I'm better at stillness, the more that I'm a dancer.
Yeah. Whoa.
The more focus I have, you know?
You know, can you talk about like why is that?
It's because I don't want to say it's control, because that's not what singing is at all. I mean, there's a sense of like gentleness in the control, but it's like, if I'm losing myself, then the clarity of what I'm doing isn't coming to outwardly as in a focused way. And I think that the care and the ability to just stand and deliver allows other people to feel more, you know. And I can still be feeling a lot and moving quote unquote in my own way, I just think to have that on the spectrum, like mm-hmm. to have stillness as an option, is important to me, and a new practice really in the last like couple of years. I never thought about that, because people would encourage it, you know, be like, oh, that's great, or oh, you're so low. And I was like, okay, cool, like I won't think about it. But now I'm like, and also I, you know, people take videos of things more, and you see yourself and you're like, whoa, I need to chill out. there's a lot of energy coming off, and it's just sporadic.
Yeah. It's so funny that you talk about stillness, because you know, we talked a little bit about singing, dance singing as a social thing, and you know, when you're hearing voices coming together. And I'm wondering, during this COVID solitary time, has that been something that's sort of encouraged the stillness? And how has it changed your kind of dancing with yourself?
I love that. COVID hasn't affected my thoughts about singing. I mean, I do think it's insane that it's like not okay to sing with a group of people right now. That is mind-blowing to me, because so much of my life was singing with other people, and also working with large groups of kids and singing together, and knowing that, like, feeling how it affected them and how much after a while they really loved it, even if at first it's like, this is dumb. But stillness, yeah. COVID, dancing with myself. Yeah, I mean, I'm not a solo artist. That's not my craft. That's clear to me. I mean, I'm releasing a record next week that's me playing piano and singing, but it's weird, to be honest. it's weird to hear it. I'm like, this is not what I do, but I'm trying, I'm working on it. And I'm like, it's a practice, but I would say I've been avoiding thinking about that question you asked.
Yeah, because it's painful. It is painful for me, at least. And
I mean,
it's important, but you know.
That's so interesting to hear you say it's painful for you, because you, what you can do like on the piano and just with your voice, to me is like, I would never be bored if I was you. I'd be like, no, I'm going to do, you know, like, I mean, I really, you inspire me. You're the way you, play with your voice and your journey of it is so wonderful to be a part of and to watch. And that video you did for Susu is like, you know, that's a really important, that's really important. Like,
thank you.
That's heavy. So I'll just say that you make me want to do that and be better at it.
Oh.
And not better, but just like keep it in my mind. It's like, oh yeah, it can be beautiful.
Yeah, it can be beautiful, but it is one shade of beautiful, you know? And sometimes I'm like, I just want to dance with other people, sing with other people. And yeah, it's a journey. I think maybe like 5 years from now, we'll both come back and be like, oh, that's what I was feeling. Okay, I can process it now. I want to loop back, just because you casually dropped, like, I'm going to be releasing an album or record next week. Where can we
find this? It is casual. It's very casual.
Casual, but important. And I want everybody to listen to it.
Thanks. Well, I'll be releasing it on Bandcamp for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put my old record up on iTunes and Spotify and then release my new one on Bandcamp.
Right.
And I'll be putting out a video as well, a little like lyric video.
And what day is it coming out?
I don't know. My friend Sandro is finishing the masters today. And then I'm going to, like, I think it'll be out probably Friday. Bandcamp Friday.
And yeah. Today, for people who are listening in the future, is March.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Friday, April 2nd. Friday, April 2nd.
Okay, April 2nd.
Can we do an interview next time where I interview you? Because most of the time I'm answering your questions, but really I'm thinking like, I really want to ask me about this and know this. Because anyway, I guess I could have done that. But
yeah, I mean, it's a conversation. Yeah,
exactly. It's a conversation.
Mm-hmm. But I am having a great time picking your brain. So very selfishly, I'm like, no. I'm gonna ask you, but we can talk
this
about
brain,
it.
This brain.
I
want to
know.
This brain.
Okay. So it's funny. We've never actually talked about this, even though we work with dance and movement so much, and I've known you for so long. Like, have you ever had any formal dance training, or maybe not even formal, but like dance, like, you know, what's
good question.
Dance story?
I wrote dance things. So I was like, I feel like they're gonna ask about what I've done. If anything, I grew up with a sister who was in ballet. I watched all her performances. I saw the Nutcracker like 100 times. She was in that every year at the Pia Bauman School, which is a place we rehearsed at together. And Pia Bauman School is like a Toronto institution. So many amazing people who are now just artists or musicians or whoever have gone through that program. And so I grew up seeing all those shows and I loved it and I wanted to dance. But my parents were sort of like, go to tennis, go do this. And so I went to gymnastics. And that was my first, as a kid, like, I would always do cartwheels and handstands. And I got made fun of a lot when I went to public school from a Montessori school, because my whole idea of recess was like, we do cartwheels. And all the girls were doing cartwheels. And I was doing cartwheels with the girls, having a great time. And anyway, there were some issues with that. But that was, gymnastics was my intro. And then I sort of lost any sort of sense of body practice through university. Which I think happens to a lot of people. I would say like maybe men, there's not like dance isn't encouraged. At least it wasn't for me. And then I found yoga as a movement practice. And Meredith actually also really encouraged me because she was like, "You're not a great dancer. You need to do more yoga." And I was like, "Okay." So I did that, and I was going to say, I took this amazing solo dance class with Dawn Carlton. I don't know if you know Dawn. She sang in the Ellen Choir quite a bit. She's an amazing dancer in Toronto.
Dawn, yeah. Dawn. I was thinking D-O-N, but it's D-A-W.
Dawn. Dawn Carlton. And her class is a 10-week course. She offers it like once or twice every, I don't know, a few years. And it's a 10-week course. And on the first week, you improvise for 1 minute. Second week, 2 minutes. Third week, and you go up to 10 minutes. And there's only three people in the class, or four. It's a very small class. And you basically, the first class is just like, okay, you're going to do a movement. And it was all movement based, which for me, I needed at that time because I was so over-identifying as a singer and was like, my voice, and was just like doing too much singing, basically. And so I wanted to do something that was just movement based. And that class taught me a lot about improvising, just first, like not even just movement improv, but just improvising and how to approach having space to make something in.
Yeah.
And about setting intentions and finding yourself and checking yourself to see if you're following through with what your intentions are. So that I would say that was a training. And then I always, for years, have been a part of the TO Lovin community and go to workshops and do all any body thing. I'm like, I'm there. Mm-hmm. But in terms of dance, not a lot. Like I don't do ballet bar, or I've done like maybe a modern class here and there, but it's very basic.
Right. So more just like integrated body things.
Yeah. Like getting to know your body. Because I have always been athletically inclined, but my coordination isn't amazing. So that's why Pilates is so interesting to me, and Alexander Technique and all these sort of functional movement where you're like, your little muscles are being worked and reminded to wake up. And then it's therapeutic. I mean, it's physical therapy. It's like very good for the brain, endorphins, you're like happy.
Yeah.
I'll just name a woman. Christine Wright is a Toronto ballet teacher, was from New York, moved to Toronto in 2015. And her approach is just amazing. She is a ballet teacher, but is all about function. And so I studied with her for many years and still do. I mean, I don't now during COVID, but you know, she's one of my people that I check in with. And Brent Carver, who's an amazing actor, would always be at his session before me. And I was always like, okay, Brent Carver's here. He's like a genius of theater and someone who I admire as a singer. And I was like, okay. And I used to ask Christine if I could vocalize during our work, during the work we did. And she was like, sure.
Oh, yeah.
So I would, that's when I started to think like, okay, I'm interested in technique and singing and movement, and I need to make a piece.
Yeah. Yeah. And it all makes so much sense, because when I see you performing, it feels so embodied, right? And you use the word intentions, and it kind of clicked like, oh, this is why your work is so compelling to me, because your intentions and your body and your intentions and your voice are so clear, even if you're not like, you know, dancing, but like, you know, it's not dancing, but it is dancing. And I'm wondering, were you always in this like comfortable, intentional relationship with your body? Did you have to cultivate it? Like, what's your journey there?
That's, I think, the cultivation is what, like I mentioned about all the workshops, all the exploration, all the body work. It's so that a feeling can come across clearly. And again, not in like a performative way, in a way to me that, because I love when I watch someone perform it doesn't matter what it is, dance, singing, like anything. And I get that feeling, you know, that where I'm like, I'm out of myself. I'm so present in the moment. That person has made me be present, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's not the edge of your seat being like, wow. It's more just like, you're in yourself. Mm-hmm. You're in yourself. It's actually for that individual person. It's not about me. It's not about it. Like, I don't know. There's some magic there that I have always latched onto, be it with like Judy Garland or Brent Carver or Meredith or Glenn Copeland, you know, these people who just are present. And I think, yeah, the cultivation, no, it wasn't always there. The love for performing was always there. So the desire to put myself in those situations was there. But no, I mean, I also have had a lot of rejection in my life of things that I've wanted to do in terms of performing, like music theater or auditions, opera things. And that's really helped me. It's helped me be like, oh, that's not what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to carve out my own thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And whether it be with a band or with a project or with how I approach music, like you realize that the people who are artists are just ones that are following their path. Mm-hmm. And so all the rejection, I think, has fueled my search to be more like, okay, I didn't get that, or I don't have a classical sound. So how can I like learn from a body perspective how they do what they do, you know? Mm-hmm. And that, for me, that changes every couple of months. And I know you probably know too, like there's vocal stuff, there's vocal work we do that no one else will notice. Like it's never to sound better or to, you know, my work has never been about that. It's like, it feels better. It feels freer. I can do this for more years. I can do this longer and not get tired. That's what I'm always curious about with what you're talking about like that.
I really resonate with that. Like, to me, I think of it as there's fast work and slow work, right? The fast work is kind of like, it shows up immediately. People are like, oh, look at this thing. Like, you know, here it is. But then the slow work, it like trickles into everything, kind of just like grows in you. And
And it's, again, it's for you. It's for your, I don't want to go like into this world, but like it's for your spiritual practice.
Yeah.
It's forever.
Yeah.
And I think performing too, live performance used to be my, like a deep love of mine. And now I don't need it as much. So now I'm trying to build more things that can exist on their own.
Right.
As like a little building, whether it be, and that could be live performance too, but it's not going to be this like moment where I was performing. It's more like I'm building that performance into the next one, into the next one, into the next one. And then that is its own practice.
Yeah. So I like to kind of zoom in a little bit into the actual process, right? So how does physical movement in your body come into your creative process when you're like throughout the different stages of making a work? Can you walk me through that?
No, you mean like with Greg stuff or with like a performance or the song I'm working, or like doing a show?
All of it. But why don't we talk about Greg, since we've, you know, we're kind of here in this.
Well, yeah, like I said, with working with Fred and Eugenie in Montreal, it really became about being in the room with them at the same time. Mm-hmm. I can only do, yes, there'd be moments where I'd be working on my mat. I don't like do dance improvs on my own or anything. I'm not like rolling around finding movement. That's not a part of my work. And I don't think I would say I'm not like, I don't have the skill to do that.
Yeah.
But one of the moves in Grex, for example, is that I think is beautiful, is like you three lying on the ground and your arm is moving in this beautiful spiral. Arm Lou, yeah.
I do that one all the time.
Amazing. Great. So that comes out of like this very clear Pilates move where, and we did it once, we've done it a few times, where you're like on the ground kind of doing this angel, like snow angel thing.
Yeah.
And I was doing that on the ground, and then all of a sudden I just started like, my arm was in the spiral, and then I was like, started doing the seventh, and then I realized, oh, that's going to be a beautiful like grass field moment amongst this movement we're doing and walking around. And I was like, so, but again, that I had to explore that in the space with the people. I never can come to the room and say, we're doing this, this is in there. It's like, which is, I think, again, different from the musical world where it's like, here's this composition that's from beginning to end that I've worked on, that's mapped out. I've done that, and I'm curious to do that again. But right now, like, I don't work on my own and bring the finished product. Yeah. That's, I love being a part of that when someone else asks me to do that. Mm-hmm. But my creative work is bringing in an idea, seeing it, asking you, Jill Amar, how it feels.
Yeah.
Like, is it relaxing? Did you feel like you were connecting to your voice? What does it feel like in your body? You know? Mm-hmm. So those questions come up. And then I also think I love acting.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of acting more than acting in a play. And so for me, like a rehearsal room is a magic place where you can try things and the process is endlessly exciting. And so when I've done a show, like I did a show called The Cave a few years ago, and I created three characters in that show, Bear, Crow, and Skunk. And we got to explore the movements and I got to be a bear and I had different voices for each of them. And then the physicality of those characters, A, came from the animal, but the director didn't make us like act like animals. Mm-hmm. He sort of encouraged we be ourselves, but then, you know, watch videos of the animals and then mimic them a little bit and then bring in our humanness to meet with the animal traits. So,
yeah.
And again, that happens just in a rehearsal room with discovery. It has to feel good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oof. There's one thing I want to remember forever. Has to feel good.
That's the secret.
Yeah.
And that, and I, for me, I used to be really intense and really like grab onto things and hold it and be like, okay, this is it. And that, I had vocal issues because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Not like debilitating. I could always sing, but and again, nobody knows. Like everyone's like, sounds great, great gig. And I'm like, I'm tired and I don't want to be tired. That's not, I can't deal with that. So a lot of this work too comes out of just wanting to be able to do anything.
Yeah.
At any time and be able to do anything they anyone asks me. I love to do everything. So I'm a generalist. I want to be able to sing art song and do some rock and all this stuff. So,
yeah. And I think it does show like you really do embody this like open, welcoming. Like when I think of you, I'm like, Alex is an explorer and like does everything, you know, and like has fun. And it's so inspiring and amazing.
Cool. I mean, and it also has its own drawbacks. Like sometimes I wish I just wrote songs and did that. That would be like, I don't know, not easier, but just, I mean, it definitely wouldn't be easier. That's its own like endlessly. But I mean, you know, the Toronto scene is like everyone is doing lots of things and that's what we all do.
Mm-hmm. And it's overwhelming and intimidating and awesome.
And and I don't have a business card because of that. I cannot I cannot sell myself. I cannot sell what I do. I can't commodify it. Like I'm just doing it.
Yeah. And no shame to business card owners.
No, not at all. No. I love that. I love people that are celebrating themselves in that way. But I just think about, again, like some of the actors I know who just do their work and I see them perform and it's like changes my life, you know, or with music too. Like, I don't know. There's just,
I know. I could talk forever, but
well, I want to interview you.
We'll do it. We'll make it happen.
Some questions.
Yeah.
Actually, okay. Sorry. I'll let you finish, but I have something to say after.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to like wrap up with something fun. And
sure. Yeah. Let's play a game.
What's your go-to song to dance to these days? What's on your iPod?
Oh my gosh. The new Cowbells record.
Yes. Ooh.
Robin got me into that band a few years ago. They were in Toronto. We went to a show and I bought actually Kalia drew this. She was selling these paintings. Isn't that beautiful? And right now the first track, which I had to listen to twice, which I think is called Red Marker. Hold on. It's called Red Marker.
Mm-hmm.
But also Pickles. I mean, Hump of the Beach. That record is like pumping. Also the new Ariana Grande record I'm really into.
I haven't checked that one out yet.
It's good. It's really good. I also had Katy Perry on a few weeks ago. Oh, just needed to listen to Teenage Dream. Like, got my walk because it was so cold. And I was like, I love how she belts. I love her belt range. And I want to write some songs where like the choruses are me just like really loud and annoying. So I recommend Cowbells to people and also any recording of Mingja that you can find to mess you up. Oh, I was just going to say that I'm going to do some live Instagram interviews in my lead up to the record. I want to interview other people about their songwriting process and their thing. And you're one of the people I want to ask.
Oh my God. Amazing. I'm so there. Okay, great. And I love that we got that on here. So, Alex Samaras, thank you so, so much for being here.
Thank you, Ming. Thank you to the D Word. And I can't wait to listen to the other interviews. This is so exciting.
And that's our show. You can find Alex Samaras on Instagram at RoncyGuy. That's R-O-N-C-E-Y, guy. And his music on Bandcamp at trial1.bandcamp.com. The D Word is produced by Dance Made in Canada, a contemporary dance festival featuring Canadian dance artists who possess unique artistic visions and come from all cultural backgrounds. This year, Dance Made in Canada presents Into Focus, in partnership with Canadian Stage, currently scheduled September 23rd through the 25th at High Park's Amphitheatre. Visit dancemadeincanada.ca to find out more about this year's festival and to donate. The D-Word's creative producer is Grace Wall-Smith, and the show is also produced by Sam Hale. Our editor and composer is Jamar Powell. Dance Made in Canada's co-festival directors are Janelle Rainville and Jeff Morris. Yvonne Ung is artistic director and also co-festival director. And I'm your host, Ming Chen. The show is also hosted by Britta B. Thank you, Canadian Heritage, the Canada Council for the Arts, Ontario Arts Council, and Toronto Arts Council for making the D Word possible. Find the D Word wherever you get your podcasts. Toodles!